Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Sports Beat on the Air brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday, February 20th of 2018. We're going to talk some Irish football in the opening segment. Bottom of this hour, Tom Noy, Notre Dame basketball insider for the South Bend Tribune, their lead columnist. He's going to join us to reflect on Notre Dame losing to Miami last night at Purcell Pavilion, 77-74. And we will ask Tom, is the opportunity for the Irish to get an NCAA tournament at-large bid all but gone? We'll get his opinion coming up after the Irish fell to 6-9 in the ACC last night with that 3-point loss to the Hurricanes. My five question of the day centers around Major League Baseball and implementing pace of play options or trying to speed up the game. So Eric's going to try to come up with five things he would like to see or things he has heard that he likes. So we'll do that coming up in a little bit. Next hour on the program, more on the Irish falling to the Miami Hurricanes. You'll hear from Mike Bray. You'll hear from Matt Farrell, who just looked devastated last night. The senior guard took that loss hard. It almost was very reflective of the mood of all Irish fans. That loss at home just seems to put a huge dent in this team's opportunity to make the NCAA tournament as an at-large team. So more on the Irish also next hour. And in just about an hour and 20 minutes, we're going to be joined by Eric Gilgenbach from Rochester, Michigan, a junior outfielder for the Fighting Irish baseball team. He was the hitting star as the Irish took 2 out of 3 from number 9 LSU. The co-ACC Player of the Week will join us live in just about an hour and 20 minutes. And we'll have rapid fire to wrap up next hour here on 96.1 FM. WSBT. So we will get to some basketball talk at the bottom of this hour. Tough one to deal with last night. It looked like the Irish, who were down 9 at halftime, roared back to take a 5-point lead. That got the crowd into the ball game, but unfortunately Miami went on that big run to retake the lead. They never looked back. And just to see the look on Matt Farrell's face, he has put everything into this program, wanted this senior season to be special. He, of course, has been banged up through this senior campaign, and the injuries have robbed this team of what could have been a very special season. Now they sit at 16-12, 6-9 of the ACC. It's just not fair, but you play with the deck you're given, and that's all you can do, Eric. You just got to keep plugging along, and maybe you find something. But that just seemed like one they needed last night.
Yeah, they did, and they roared back. They were ahead by 5, and then Miami went on that 10-0 run, and they were just kind of playing catch-up the rest of the game. And Miami hit some really difficult threes, I would say, in that stretch. But there were also those killer offensive rebounds late in the game that were converted for putbacks, too, that when Notre Dame had a chance.
All right, so more on the Irish basketball team coming up in just a few moments here on WSBT Radio. Big Ten-wise tonight, Michigan State can clinch at least a share of the Big Ten crown if they take care of Illinois in East Lansing tonight. All right, let's talk some football. And, Eric, I got a Twitter reaction from one of my followers yesterday. And so let me just throw it at you. And it was a Notre Dame football question from one of my followers. And he was basically asking, with the current quarterback situation, Brandon Wimbush, the starter last year, of course, had his ups and downs. Ian Book took over in the bowl game and did some good things, helping the Irish pull out that victory over LSU. And, of course, started the North Carolina game and played from start to finish, helping Notre Dame to pick up a road victory over the Tar Heels. So the Twitter follower was wondering, with all that being said, is there any chance that Brian Kelly would try to follow a model that was partially used in 2012 of Ever Golson and Tommy Rees seeing playing time. Now, of course, the Purdue game was the second game of the year after they had been to Ireland, and the game was tied, and Coach Kelly felt like Tommy Rees could handle the two-minute drill better than Ever Golson. You remember that. And Rees came in, led them down the field. The Irish kicked a field goal and won the game over Purdue. So, Eric, do you see any benefit at all for Brian Kelly even thinking about something like that with his quarterbacks? And I'll say this. Let me say this. I had somebody on Twitter today saw what we were going to talk about, and he said he hopes this particular segment only lasts about 5 seconds because he wants nothing to do with this. So go ahead.
Well,
1001.
Here's the thing. The question was, will Brian Kelly, it's not should Brian Kelly, right? It was will Brian Kelly. Well, Darren, how many of these have we had? We had the Kaiser Malik Zaire experiment in Texas. We had the change-up quarterback concept back in 2011. We had the relief quarterback concept in 2012.
Have you nicknamed all these, by the way, for your book in the future?
Yeah. I mean, there's a big difference between will and should, and I don't think he will, and I don't think he should. I think it worked in the LSU game because Brandon Wimbush just didn't look like he was going to be able to, but it wasn't, they didn't go back and forth. Wimbush came out, Ian Book came in, and that was kind of the end of things. I think you could pick a quarterback, I think that whoever tweeted you about hoping this segment would last 5 seconds, I kind of was in the, I wish I could have run through that quicker, but I want to be fair to the people that it's just, I've never seen people give up on a quarterback so fast, and not saying that he's going to turn this around.
Who had 30 touchdowns.
But, right, but there's, it's mind-boggling how many people want to make him the fourth string running back from the first string quarterback. The thing is, let's say you remove him from the quarterback competition, which isn't the question, but let's say you do that to make him your fourth string running back, because essentially that's what he would be. He's not going to beat out Dexter Williams or Tony Jones Jr. Maybe he's number three. But then your backup quarterback is who? Avery Davis? Phil Jakovic? You know, you want somebody with some experience if you're going to have a backup situation. And the other thing is, I don't think Brandon Wimbush would move positions. Okay, got that one out of the way. What with the, let's use the one that worked in the two quarterback system, and that was the Golson-Rees one of 2012, the relief quarterback. That one worked because their skill sets were so different, and you had one with a lot of experience and one with zero experience. That's why that one worked.
And their defense put them in really good positions to succeed. There wasn't a whole lot of pressure to put up 25 points a game.
Correct. There wasn't a lot of pressure because that was a team that was driven by its defense. And you know what? You were going to take a lot of chances if it's third and long.
Hand it off
yep. Or throw a safe out pattern, but don't throw over the middle and punt the ball and then get it back a minute and a half later because your defense is so good. With this team, the defense is going to be probably the best defense Notre Dame's had other than the 2012 defense in the Brian Kelly era. So there is going to be an ability to rely on the defense a little bit more than they're used to, but I don't know where this makes sense. I think that you want to have a number one quarterback and a guy that's able to come in if you've got somebody that has an injury or is ineffective, and Ian Book has been able to do that so far. Could they flip-flop roles? It's possible. Ian Book has earned that open mind in the spring, I think. And so you go through spring and you see how it plays out. But I think we're getting way ahead of things. We're assuming that things are only going to get worse for Brandon Wimbush, and I'm not sure that that's the case. It could happen. And again, we've had many, many, many instances where guys make dramatic improvement as their second-year starter, both at Notre Dame and at other schools. So I wouldn't rule it out.
Eric, let me say this first, and I cannot emphasize this enough. I want nothing to do with dual quarterbacks. I'm with you. I want nothing to do with it. But I'm going to partially defend people who are trying to rack their brains as armchair head coaches, trying to figure out what's going to be the best thing for this football team. Eric, the facts are fans see what could be a really, really good defense this year. I mean, we're not expecting a drop-off. We're expecting the defense to be even better than what we saw last year. And last year was a transition year, and to get what you got out of the defense with these players learning new schemes, new coaches, new philosophies, it could not have turned out really any better. Fair?
I would agree.
So we both believe there is a huge step that can be taken by this defense. In 2018, you get Bonner and Tillery back. You get Coney back. You move Tranquil inside where he can be, hopefully, another tackling machine. And you've got probably two new starting safeties, at least one with Aloy Gilman, who dazzled everyone in practice this year. So everything adds up to this defense being really good and being a defense that could lead a team to a top 10 type ranking. Okay?
Okay.
You look at the offense. People are looking at the offense as the thing that could hold them back from reaching their goals of getting into the playoff. You feel like they're still going to be able to run the ball pretty well. Now, let's don't expect what we saw last year with the brick wall on the left side of the offensive line, the two bulldozers that just did an amazing job, but they're still going to be very good running the football because that's who they are. So, Eric, everybody sees that quarterback spot as the one thing that could really keep this team from reaching their goals. And I think the problem is, Eric, the fact is that the last game of the year, the last thing these fans witnessed was their starting quarterback getting replaced by the backup. And I think it's hard for a lot of people to lose that thought, and they're assuming, well, that must be the end of Brandon Wimbush if you're not willing to play him in a game that, honestly, it's not going to change your season one way or the other. It's a bowl game. It's not a playoff game. You win, great. You lose, you go on. You get ready for next year. So it kind of feels like an exhibition game, and he still got pulled in that game. I think that's why people are looking for any type of answer that might help this football team get to the finish line next year.
Well, I think it's going to be more difficult from the standpoint that whoever is the quarterback is not going to have as strong a supporting cast, I don't think. Right. You are going to you're going to have question marks at wide receiver. The biggest question mark being who's your field stretcher. I think that's the biggest thing. Tight end is in good shape. I think the offensive line is good, but there's going to be some growing pains with some, at least, you know, one new person in the mix and moving some people around. And then you look at running backs, and again, I think they're in pretty good shape with the running backs, but the wide receivers, I think, is the biggest deal. Had Stepherson and stayed, you know, on the right side of the law and stayed in school and Equanimeous had come back, then I think you had something. And so there's going to be some adjustments there too. But, you know, again, I think it's too early. Let's get through spring. I know somebody emailed me today and said, well, how can you trust the practices that you're seeing of Brandon Wimbush because he looked good in practice last year and he looked bad in games? I think what happened there is, and I think and there's fair. Something to it. That's a fair question.
Because we build him up. Hey, right. I'm the first one to admit, right. Pass along what I saw, and it looked really good.
Right. But the thing about it is, Darren, I think that mechanical problems related to field vision happened first. Then kind of the game anxiety stuff happened after that. And I think if you can fix the first part of that, the second part will follow it. And so I do think that you can test it and see in practices. I don't think, you know, I mean, the one thing is Notre Dame has a really good defense that can test it more. Michigan is going to be just a really difficult opener because there's so many good players on that Michigan defense. But, you know, I still think that if you're an experienced coach like Brian Kelly and Chip Long, you should be able to discern that kind of stuff. I think one other thing that's interesting, Darren, was when we interviewed Tom Reese, we asked him about a Tommy Reese experience and his own experience about transforming from a guy that Kelly didn't trust at all in his first spring to a guy that suddenly became the backup and then became a starter. And he talked about his own transformation. So as much as we kind of wonder about Tom's ability to help Brandon Wimbush and Ian Book, he does have that. That's one experience he does have. He was a guy that had to elevate his game quite a bit to get in the mix.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on 96.1 FM, WSBT. Do you want to talk about some breaking news?
Sure.
You want to do it? All right, so we've got some breaking news surrounding the Fighting Irish football team, and it looks like they have picked up a commitment for the class of 2019. So, Eric, pass along what you know.
Well, he committed a little bit earlier than I thought. I thought it was going to be about an hour later, and that is Hunter Spears. He's a big defensive end from the state of Texas, 6'5", 260 pounds, four-star kid. Visited in junior day. Tom Lemming, the CBS Sports recruiting analyst, feels like Hunter may eventually grow into an interior guy, a three technique, if you will, defensive tackle. But I think if you are looking for a comp, I think you're looking at somebody like Jay Hayes, the strong side defensive end, the bigger of the defensive ends that isn't the pass rushing defensive end, and Hunter Spears fits that profile. He visited on junior day at the end of January, so this gives them a couple guys that visited in late January at that junior day, and gives them a second defensive lineman, adding to Jacob Lacey, who's really talented as well, four-star kid from Kentucky. So a really good start for Mike Elston, and this could be, the way things are shaping up, this could be a class that rivals, if they can get a couple of really five-star kind of kids in it and they're in on them, this could be like the Tuitt, Aaron Lynch, Ishak Williams class, and had a lot of other kids that maybe didn't pan out because of injuries, but that class had a lot of front seven talent, including defensive linemen.
Okay, Hunter Spears from Texas, 6'5", 260, strong side defensive end, maybe a defensive tackle in the future, listed by 24/7 Sports as a four-star recruit, and four is the magic number right now. Four members of the class of 2019 for the Irish. All four are four-stars. Spears, you mentioned Jacob Lacey out of Bowling Green, Kentucky, a defensive tackle. You've got cornerback K.J. Wallace from Atlanta, Georgia, as a four-star, and a young man who committed all the way back in July, Cade McNamara, the quarterback out of Reno, Nevada, also a four-star. So you like where this is going so far?
I do. I think, and again, one thing that we've seen with Mike Elston returning to the defensive line position to coach it is, we saw a large jump in player development at that position group last season. We considered that position group a question mark at best, and it ended up being an asset for that team. Certainly not Alabama-type domination or anything, but there was a big step forward. And now you have Jerry Tillery coming back and Jonathan Bonner coming back kind of unexpectedly in Bonner's case, and Tillery was a coin flip. And then you've got some young guys filling in. You look at the class that's coming in, Jason Adamalola, Jamion Franklin especially. I think what this class will eventually need to add, and they are in the mix with these kind of kids, are those defensive ends, those elite pass rushers. And so this is a really great start.
Hunter Spears, defensive end, Texas. verbally commits to the Fighting Irish, four members of the class of 2019, and I would assume in a matter of seconds, if not already, there'll be a story up at IndyInsider.com.
Yes, it will be in a matter of minutes, probably during the next commercial.
So I probably should take a break then and let you work a little bit. Yeah. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you, Sports Beat tonight, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Notre Dame basketball will be next in our line of thinking as we look back at last night's 77-74 loss to the Miami Hurricanes at Purcell Pavilion. The Irish are now 16-12, 6-9 of the ACC. Bonzi Colson's coming back to practice. Rex Pfluger looks like he'll play on Saturday, but not good news on DJ Harvey. Looks like, according to Mike Bray, the freshman is done for the season. So what lies ahead for this Irish basketball team? How much of a crippling loss was that last night for their tournament chances? Do they have any hope left for an at-large bid? We'll ask Tom Noy, the Fighting Irish Basketball Insider for the South Bend Tribune, coming up after we take a quick timeout. You're listening to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser on 96.1 FM, WSBT. Along with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune, I'm Darren Pritchett. Joining us on the line is Fighting Irish Basketball Insider for the South Bend Tribune, also their lead columnist, Tom Noy. He was courtside at Purcell Pavilion for last night's Notre Dame 77-74 loss to the Miami Hurricanes. Mike Bray's squad is now 16-12 overall, 6-9 in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Their next matchup Saturday at Wake Forest. 3 o'clock tip on 96.1 FM, WSBT. Tom, thanks for jumping on board. How are you today?
Doing great, fellas. What's happening?
Well, a little bit of everything, and we want to bring this basketball situation to light because ever since Bonzi Colson went down with the injury, Tom, Mike Bray has put it out there publicly, let's get to 9-9. Let's figure out a way to get to 9-9, then have a little success in the ACC tournament and maybe a sneak into the NCAA tournament. Well, the team is now 6-9. You have two very, very winnable games over the next two contests against Wake Forest on the road and Pittsburgh at home. You've got that tough matchup with number one Virginia to wrap up the regular season. Now, the good news is Bonzi Colson's going to start practicing on Thursday and Friday, and maybe he'll be ready for Pittsburgh. Rex Pfluger, it looks like he'll be back for Wake Forest. With all that being said, stirring the pot here with all those things, the loss to Miami last night, Tom, in your opinion, did that pretty much clinch the fact that this team is not going to get an at-large bid, or do you believe there still is a route to get that bid?
Sure, there's a route, but it's so difficult right now, Darren. And I think, you know, I don't want to be the guy that's going to throw the cold water on everything, but just look at Matt Farrell's reaction post-game.
Correct.
Listen to Mike Bray's post-game comments. I think they know. Mike Bray has been up front this whole haul saying these guys have been very realistic about what it's going to take. And I think after that game last night, after the final horn, they're very realistic, knowing that it's probably, barring an absolute March miracle, and what that miracle is going to be is to do something no Atlantic Coast Conference team has ever done in a postseason tournament, and that's win five games in 5 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, to get an automatic bid. That the way this is shaping up, that's going to wind up being their only route to get back to March Madness for a four straight season.
Tom, is there any way if they won two out of three, they'd have a high enough seed not to play the five games, or are they locked into that?
I think they're pretty much locked in right now, Eric. A lot still has to happen. Wake Forest and Pittsburgh obviously are going to be the 14-15 finishing teams. I think Georgia Tech is all but locked in to 13. So there might be some wiggle room as far as maybe they can get to 9. They would have to get to 9th place in the league not to play on Tuesday. But there was so much on the line last night. And when the game was over, the body language, the emotions, the words all said, you know what, we're now going to have to recalibrate and not think 9-9, not think 8-10. Even Mike Bray said in his post-game press conference last night, he said, I don't know what tournament, postseason tournament we're going to play in. You know, I don't know where we're going. He doesn't want to come right out and say, you know what, that's it. That's it. We're done. We're finished with the NCAA. We're going to have to set our sights on the NIT. We're going to have to go try to win X amount of games in Brooklyn to do this or to do that. But just all the way around, you know that this, the next couple of days, that's going to have to be like a healing day for this basketball team, because they still believed up until last night's loss, they still believed they were going to do enough to not only avoid playing on Tuesday in Brooklyn, but they were going to do enough to get back to the NCAA tournament.
Tom Noy from the South Bend Tribune talking Irish Hoops on WSBT Radio. So let's play the odds. They beat Wake Forest. They beat Pittsburgh. They lose to Virginia. Tom, they're 18-13 overall. That's 8-10 of the ACC. Without bringing in what's going to happen to the ACC tournament, one of the variables that the committee looks at, obviously, is who you have beaten. Do you think they have done enough against quality teams to get consideration in an environment that we're talking about an 8-10 ACC season?
Long before the season ever gets going, long before the ACC season starts going, Mike Bray sits there when he talks to the media and he says, there is so much opportunity in our league, the ACC. You have so much opportunity to win power games. You don't have to get all of them, but you have to get some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame hasn't gotten any of them. And that's really what's going to hold this program back, where you just laid out the scenario. They beat Wake, they beat Pittsburgh, but they lose to number one Virginia. If that scenario holds and things don't get wacky in the rest of the league, Notre Dame will finish ACC play against teams with winning records within the league. They'll have finished 2-9 in the ACC, and that's just not NCAA tournament worthy. That number is hurting them, and then also what's hurting them, it's hard to make a strong case. You can make a case, but it's hard to make a strong, legitimate case for a Notre Dame team to have an at-large bid when they've lost 5 home games, and they're average. They're 4-4 in league play at home. Now, if you could get North Carolina or Louisville or mm-hmm. Virginia Tech or Miami, any combination of those four, you get maybe 2 of those four, maybe 3 of those four, we're sitting here on February 20th having a whole different discussion.
Tom, we were talking about this a little bit on last night's show with the injuries. I mean, is there any rhyme or reason to them? And do you feel like anybody came back too early and maybe, oh boy, here's the chuckle. I'm either getting myself or Tom in trouble with that question. I didn't even finish it. Go ahead. You hit the buzzer on Family Feud. Go ahead and answer the question.
Did they come back too early? Yes, Mike Bray said last night, DJ Harvey may have come back too early from the bone bruise in his left knee. He said, you know, I love that attitude, but in the future, he can't do that because it's not only jeopardizing the team, it's jeopardizing his future as a basketball player. I think DJ Harvey knew that this team needed him back so badly, and they just needed a different dimension that he kept saying, maybe trying to convince the medical staff and maybe trying to convince himself, more importantly, you know what, the knee's going to hold up. It's okay. It's fine. Everything's good. They got the second opinion from the Chicago Bulls doctor a couple weeks ago. That didn't really disclose much else of what they already knew. But Mike Bray said last night, DJ Harvey tried to come back too soon. He tweaked it again out in Chestnut Hill during practice on Friday. And they're just going to have to go basically the rest of the season without having DJ Harvey back. So he came back too early. I think Rex Fluger, even before he fell hard, and it was a nasty fall that he took early in the second half on Saturday against Boston College. Rex Fluger, you could count up the amount of ailments that he has. He's got a knee, he's got a hand, he's got an arm problem, now he's got a back injury. He's running on fumes. So it's just something where you just kind of wonder, it hit Rex because of all the minutes that he's playing. Now is it going to eventually catch up to guys like Martinus Gebbin mm-hmm. and T.J. Gibbs, the only two guys in the starting lineup that haven't missed games because of injury, but they're logging a heck of a lot of minutes. T.J. Gibbs played all 40 last night. So the injury situation, it's just, I've never been around the program in the 20 years that I've covered it, that to have something like this happen to where it's not one guy, it's just another guy after another guy after another guy. And just when you think you got it all figured out, John Mooney goes down with the ankle. Rex Fluger goes down with the back. And what would have been the odds back in October had I said to Darren, they're going to play a really, really, really important ACC home game in late January or in late February, and with 3 minutes to go in the game, three guys on the floor for Notre Dame playing crucial minutes will be Nick Jogo, Elijah Burns, and Austin Torres. That was the situation they were in last night against Miami. Really good guys, but not guys that you can ride to get a conference win when you really need a conference win.
And Rex Fluger would have been a nice guy to have on the floor with Lonnie Walker IV going off for 19 points, 5 of 7 of 3. As I was watching the game, I'm just picturing Rex on him, and probably this game would have been a little different. Tom, this was mentioned to me by a couple of fans on social media. Two people said the same exact thing. They were very surprised that TJ Gibbs was not more a part of the offense last night. First, we got to say this. With the way this team shares the ball offensively, sometimes it's hard for a certain guy to get so many shots. There's a lot of guys that can score on this team. If you look at the box score, he had the fifth most shots on the team last night. He was 4 of 7 from the field, 1 of 3 from the three-point line, had 11 points. People felt like he was just too quiet last night. Is it tough for Gibbs and Farrell to both have big nights when they're both in the lineup at the same time? And do you feel like those fans have a point that TJ should have been more of a part of the offense last night, then maybe that could have made a difference?
Well, if TJ Gibbs has only taken 7 shots, I think a lot of that falls on TJ Gibbs, because you've been around this program. This isn't Mike Bray. Notre Dame, when they run offense, they're not running specific sets. Like, how many times have you heard Mike Bray say, we're not running stuff for Matt Farrell, or we're not running plays for John Mooney? It comes within the flow of the offense. I think TJ Gibbs has been around the block long enough to know that if I haven't gotten the ball and I haven't gotten a shot for 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes, I'm going to just go get myself a shot. And in this offense, that's encouraged. Mm-hmm. It's not like if TJ Gibbs throws up a couple of bad shots, he's coming out of the game, because there's nobody to come in for him. So it's not something where the offense is ignoring TJ Gibbs or Matt Farrell's ignoring TJ Gibbs. The fans that are wondering if they can't play together, go back and watch the Florida State game. Matt Farrell, I think, had 28 points, and TJ Gibbs had 19 that night. So they can, they absolutely can play together. Maybe it goes back to it's just one of those things with TJ Gibbs to where he's starting to get worn down, because he's playing 40 minutes a night. He's got to play, and even last night with Rex out, he had to step up his defensive game and go up against one of the top offensive perimeter players in Miami. Chasing guys around the floor for that amount of time, that takes a lot out of you. And we didn't see the real TJ Gibbs last night, but that's another offshoot of the injuries and the shortened rotation. It's to the point now where if you've got Gevin, Mooney, Farrell, and Gibbs, all four of those guys have to be at their really, really best, at the top of their game. And if one or two of them are off, Mooney didn't play. He didn't play well, just like TJ Gibbs didn't play well. Mooney and Gibbs don't play well, they don't have a shot.
Tom, is any of this injury stuff help next year's team? I mean, obviously, if Harvey were playing, that would be an easier answer, but you're not going to have Bonzi Colson or Matt Farrell next year, or Martin Gebman for that matter. But with Jogo getting minutes, with Mooney kind of finding a role, does any of this play into a positive for the 2019 season?
It may to an extent, Eric, but in some ways it may make Mike Bray's job a little harder next year, because he's got the most coveted recruiting class that he's had in 18 years walking in the door in June, and then they're going to go to the Bahamas on a foreign tour in August to try to figure out how all the pieces fit. But there's opportunity for guys like Robbie Carmody and Dane Goodwin. You bring in a Juwan Durham off his sit-out season after transferring from Connecticut. There are going to be a lot of pieces that Mike Bray is going to have to move around the rotation board as to, okay, who's going to be able to play, who takes Matt Farrell's spot. We've got Prentice Hubb coming in, who's coming off a reconstructive surgery of his right knee. So it's something where I think it jumbles it more than it helps it, because you lose Colson, you lose Farrell, it would have really been a this is the way it would have been really beneficial for this basketball team had Martin Gebben had one more year, because Martin Gebben is playing at the top of his collegiate game right now. And you look out there and you say, man, where would this team have been had Martin Gebben been able to come back for one more season? So they're really going to start over and start from scratch. And this has just been, it's been such a jumble and it's been such a grab bag to where there's been no real good consistency or flow or rhythm to where you can say, okay, we're going to carry this, this, and this over to 2018-19.
Tom Noy, our guest from the South Bend Tribune. Bonzi Colson is scheduled to practice on Thursday, again on Friday. What are your expectations once he gets into a game situation?
It'll be interesting. I think he's going to politic left, right, up, down, back, forward, in and out to Mike Bray between Thursday and Saturday afternoon at 2:30 before he goes out to warm up at Lawrence Schill Coliseum in Winston-Salem to play on Saturday. Like, he's going to be like, Coach, I'm ready. I want to play. But Mike Bray, he threw up the red flag again last night and said, Bonzi Colson can talk all he wants and he can make his stance all he wants. We're not going to play him until he's ready. And I don't think having sat out for 8 weeks that he can get ready in basically 2 hours. Notre Dame practices maybe an hour on Thursday and maybe an hour on Friday before they get on a plane and head for North Carolina. So I think the realistic expectation is Wednesday against Pittsburgh. But again, you have to proceed with caution with that, because remember, Bonzi Colson, it took him a good 6 weeks when the season started to kind of find his flow and to get back to the Bonzi Colson that we all knew or that we all expected him to be. He was playing his best basketball 6 weeks into the season. Right now, he's not going to have 6 weeks. He's going to have basically 6 days to get himself back into that sort of rhythm to get ready for Pittsburgh and then go to Virginia and then turn around and go to Brooklyn. So it's really hard to say he's been out for 2 months and by Pittsburgh or by Virginia, he's going to give you 21-4 and 10-4 rebounds a game, which is what he was averaging. Now, it would be nice, but I don't know how we can expect that, because remember Luke Herangode, when he was hurt his senior year, he missed about 4 weeks and he came back and he just wasn't there again. So it's going to take Bonzi Colson a little bit longer time to get back into basketball shape.
Tom, what do you think him not playing all this time will do as far as his NBA stock? I'm sure that's not on his mind right now, but at some point it will be. I mean, people know what kind of player he is and what kind of range. I mean, will it have any effect at all, the fact that he missed half a season?
None, because we'll go back to Kyrie Irving, who he played in 8 games and got hurt, broke his toe, or had a foot problem his freshman year at Duke. They shut him down the first week of December, and he was still the first pick in the NBA draft. Now, Bonzi Colson's not going to be the first pick. He probably won't be the 21st pick. He probably won't be a first-round pick. But what Bonzi Colson will be able to do is his numbers speak for themselves. Everybody knows what he can do on the basketball court. What's going to be key for Bonzi Colson come May is the NBA draft combine in Chicago, where teams will be able to talk to him. He'll test. He may or may not play five on five scrimmage situations. He'll get to go through drills. Then when he starts visiting different NBA teams and on his NBA tour leading up to the draft, where he's playing 3-on-3 against guys or 1-on-1 against guys at different visits, that's when teams will really see, you know what, he's only 6'5", but man, that wingspan and that ability to just score points and to get buckets, we're intrigued by him. So he's, regardless of the injury and regardless of what happens once he comes back, just as long as he doesn't get hurt, he will have an opportunity to make an NBA roster in the spring, the summertime, and early fall.
Tom, we'll leave you with this, and I was not going to ask this question for another week, but Mike Bray brought up the dreaded NIT initials during his press conference last night. Matt Farrell, Bonzi Colson, Martinus Gebben, among other things, in their career at Notre Dame, went to 2 NCAA Tournament Elite Eights. They won an ACC Tournament Championship. Oh, I forgot, it's ACC Championship. You don't say tournament in the ACC. My apologies. So My question is, after all the things they've accomplished, and they have done amazing things taking this program to the next level, is there any part of you that says that going to the NIT is just not the way this thing should end for those guys? It should end in the ACC tournament, and going to the NIT just is not the proper send-off for these three terrific basketball players. Is there any argument at all for bypassing the NIT?
Absolutely. First of all, the NIT stinks. Sorry, but it's just not. You work your entire career, your entire off season, to do one thing, and that's to get to the NCAA tournament. You want to be in that field of 68. However you get there, you just want to get there and get in. That's what the sport is really all about. Nobody really pays any attention to the NIT. If they go, now I understand Mike Bray made his argument last night, it'll give Bonzi Colson a chance to play with these guys.
And I respect that.
I do too. I totally understand. Matt Ferrell and Bonzi Colson, they're the best of friends. They're roommates. They've spent 4 years together. They want to go win an NIT championship. But from where this program has come from, now, if Notre Dame had had a losing season the last 2 years, we're having a different discussion as far as what the NIT means. But this team, these seniors, have set a specific standard in their college careers of getting to the NCAA tournament, of making it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, of almost getting to the program's first Final Four since 1978. It's a really hard sell to even the average fan to turn around and say, we're going to go to the NIT and we're going to go and try to win it. After the season that this program has had and with what's coming in August, now everybody will say, well, you got to go to the NIT because you want to build for next year. That's nonsense. The only way they're going to start building for next year is the foreign tour. That's why they have the foreign tour, the 10 practices, the 4 games in the Bahamas. That's when next year starts. Nothing that this program does in the NIT is going to help them for next season. So it's just something where it's hard to get excited about the NIT when all the focus of college basketball is on the NCAA tournament. It's like saying, To guys on a football team, you've been to the Final Four playoff each year last 3 years. Your senior year, you're not going to go to the football playoff and have a chance to play for a national championship. You're not going to play in any of those bowl games. Instead of that, you're going to go play in the Pool and Weed Eater Bowl in Shreveport, Louisiana, Eric Hansen's favorite place. That's a hard sell, isn't it?
Because, sure is.
Because that's what this program's facing.
Tom Noy covers the Irish like no one else, and he's got articles for you to read right now in the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. Tom, thanks for doing this, as always. Greatly appreciate your time, and who would have thought in August we'd be having these conversations in February? Crazy.
Absolutely not me.
All right.
Good to be with you guys.
All right, take care. Yep, that's Tom Noy, lead columnist and Fighting Irish basketball insider for the South Bend Tribune. 8 minutes in front of the top of the hour. We'll sneak in the My 5 question of the day next on WSBT.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
We're going with baseball for today's question. Major League Baseball, the commissioner, Rob Manfred's going to install pace of play regulations for the 2018 season, including limiting the number of visits to the mound by anybody to 6 in a game. So we asked today's question to Eric, the 5 ways you believe pace of play could be improved in Major League Baseball. We'll start with number 5.
Well, I'm not passionate about this, Darren, because I don't think it's a huge problem most of the time. But number 5, I will go with keep batters in the batter's box. Limit the times that they can step out of the batter's box, because that seems to be where a big problem is. Have a big tether that tethers them to the batter's box and then breaks as they run to first base.
That was a rule a couple of years ago, and the umpires stopped enforcing it. Number 4.
Limit how long an argument can be. We don't see as much of it because of the replay, but when we do, have a time limit of 2 minutes, and then after which, if the guy doesn't stop arguing, meaning the manager or the player, then he's automatically ejected and forced to eat the worst thing at the concession stand.
If it was the 80s, we would grandfather in Earl Weaver and Tommy Lasorda, and they could go as long as they want.
There you go.
Number three.
Well, within the batter's box, Bader for St. Louis, he fixes his batting gloves between every pitch. So you get one scratch or one equipment adjustment per at-bat.
All right. Number two.
I would say quicken the breaks in and out of TV commercials. It's not just the commercials. It's sometimes that the TV, they have to talk into the break. They have to talk out of the break. You know what? Do your talking as the action's going on. Don't make them wait until you're ready.
And more than anything else, what you believe could help pace a play in Major League Baseball.
More efficient replay decisions. There's times that they're really good with it. There's times that you're scratching your head saying, everybody could see he was safe. What are they doing?
But you can only scratch your head once.
That's right. You can only scratch your head once.
That's the Buy 5 question of the day from Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, Tyler, magically on vacation, was able to write a story about Hunter Spears, the latest recruit in the 2019 recruiting class for Notre Dame football. Really good get from Texas. Finn will have a story on a Dowagiac high school player that wrestles and plays basketball, hopefully not in the same game.
I heard about this. That's tough. I mean, that's the same time of the year.
Yeah, and then we will have a boys basketball game with no wrestling, Edwardsburg and Marion, and of course, much, much more.
At least no wrestling schedule.
No wrestling.
It could happen. Yes. Who knows?
Yes. When I played basketball, I wrestled and punched.
There you go. Thanks, Eric. Sean joins me in a moment. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Well, since the show began, it's still raining. This just in, breaking news. And it may rain a little while after the show is over. Sports be brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. In about 25 minutes, we're going to speak with Eric Gilgenbach, Notre Dame outfielder, co-ACC Player of the Week, had a huge series down in Baton Rouge, helping Notre Dame to take 2 out of 3 from 9th-ranked LSU. So we'll talk to Eric live coming up in just a little bit. We have rapid fire on the way. We will recap the Notre Dame football commitment today as the Irish got a yes from defensive end Hunter Spears from Texas. There's a story available right now on Hunter at IndyInsider.com. And, of course, in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports section. So we will get to that later on in this opening segment of the 6 o'clock hour. But we start with college basketball and Miami. Came to town and took care of the Irish last night, 77-74. The Irish fall to 16-12, 6-9 in the Atlantic Coast Conference. Good news is Bonzi Colson's going to practice on Thursday and Friday. Then we'll see where that goes. So the Irish could get their All-American back for the first time in a long, long time. It seems like it's been a year. Also, it appears Rex Pfluger can play Saturday at Wake Forest, had swelling in his back, did not play last night. So some parts are coming back. Now, DJ Harvey, Mike Bray said last night, is more than likely done for the season. And they could have used Rex Pfluger last night against Lonnie Walker, who was doing some good things from the perimeter. But with all that being said, the Irish had put themselves in position to win the game. And we have said that so many times over the last 5-6 weeks. They get to maybe inside that 8-minute media timeout with a chance to win a game. Very rarely since Colson has been out have they been not in position to win a game. NC State on the road comes to mind as one game that they just didn't have that opportunity. But even Duke, deep into the second half, 10, 12 minutes to go, they were right there.
Carolina
as well. So even with all the injuries, this team put themselves in position to win. They had a five-point lead. Then Miami goes on the big run, retakes control of the game, and they close out the Irish 77-74. So Mike Bray's not making any excuses, but injuries are a part of this whole thing. But even with this team shorthanded without Pfluger and Colson and Harvey last night, the team was good enough to have a chance to beat Miami over the first 32 minutes, 35 minutes of the ball game. But they could not, unfortunately, sustain the success, which has happened too many times down the stretch.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's been a recurring theme, and it's just, you mentioned all of them. I mean, Bonzi Colson, Matt Farrell, DJ Harvey, and now Rex Pfluger as well. And it's they just haven't been a complete team since December. Unfortunately, and it's like plugging the holes in the dam. They get one thing back, and then they lose another guy. And you mentioned Pfluger. I mean, his presence. Jogo did a solid enough job at the offensive end of the floor, but he ended up playing 37 minutes, which is like triple his minutes almost. And Pfluger was averaging 33 minutes a game, and Jogo down around 14 or something like that. So he not only took over Pfluger's minutes, but he exceeded them. And Miami, just so athletic and quick, so much quicker. And that's where they really missed Rex, was at the defensive end of the floor last night. You talked about Walker. He's a guy who ended up scoring like almost 8 points over his average last night. And you have to think that if Rex was in there defensively, he could have compensated for some of that. It at least kept him close to his average. And in a three-point game, I mean, pretty big, that presence missing. What I really liked about Notre Dame last night was they scored 18 points in the paint in the first half, which is a pretty good number. And then so they come out and they really adjusted in the second half and took it to the basket almost right away. And then they matched that 18 in the paint in like the first 11 minutes of the second half. And it's like, man, things are going. And then Elijah Burns gets that three-point play and they're up by five. And that's still with about 8 minutes to play, but they only got 2 points in the paint the rest of the way because they just couldn't hit some of the shots, whether it was inside or outside. So they kind of figured out what they needed to do and took it to them because Miami spent focused a lot of their defense on defending Matt Farrell after the big day he had against Boston College the other day.
Just 9 shots for Matt in the game. He hit 5 of those, 4 of 8 from the three-point line, and another terrific stat line, 16 points, 6 rebounds, and 6 assists in 40 minutes of action. And this is how Matt Farrell responded to the Irish coming up short last night at home to Miami and falling to 6-9 in the ACC.
You're right. Can't make excuses. Never have. And we had guys on the floor that know how to play. We were good enough to win. And they hit big shots down the stretch. They hit tough shots that were big shots. And we found a way to claw back. We fought, but unfortunately, you know, that's been the story all year. And the only thing we can do is keep fighting. And hopefully we got some good mojo coming back. We got Bonzi coming back. And we got to play our asses off the next 3 games.
Well, the look on Farrell's face after the loss, after singing the alma mater, took his jersey and just put it over his head. You could see the anguish on his face, the frustration, the disappointment. And with all the injuries being put aside, I think they all looked at last night's game the same way we all did.
Mm-hmm.
You got to win at home. You got to get this victory over Miami. Because the easiest road to 9-9 in the ACC, the best way to strengthen your tournament resume was to beat Miami. Having lost that, you now know what you face. You got to win at Wake Forest. Very doable. You're going to beat Pittsburgh at home. But now to get to that magical number that Coach Bray has talked about since early January, you got to go to number one Virginia and take down the Cavaliers. And then if you accomplish that, then winning two or three games in Brooklyn, that might get you into the NCAA tournament. But now they got to do it the hard way. And you almost feel like that might have been the breaking point. Now, maybe they can get over it. They can flush it. You got several days, of course, until they play on Saturday. But it almost felt like that the players' reaction to last night's loss, they knew what their ultimate fate is going to be.
Yeah. I think Matt Farrell epitomized it between the look and the tears in his eyes when he was walking off the court and the same in the locker room when he was doing those post-game interviews. He had a towel wrapped around his neck and his face was just buried there. He obviously didn't want to talk about it, but they knew. And I think just the cumulative effect of this whole thing, because of the fact, as you mentioned, it's not like they've just been without Bonzi Colson and in the stretches without Matt Farrell. It's not like they've been blown out with just a couple exceptions. I mean, they didn't show up against NC State, and it showed. But as we talked about, Duke and North Carolina, they were in both of those games for a long time. And just the cumulative effect of all these close losses, they've been in them down to the wire. They've figured out ways to stay in these games. They've made adjustments over the course of these games. And guys we didn't expect to see maybe barely any of this season have at different times played big roles in these games, but they just haven't figured out a way to get over the hump in these games. So they've been so close, and just the emotional toll seems like has really been taken on this team. And now, as the season starts running out, you're running out of time. There just aren't enough games to be able to make up the kind of ground it seems like that they need to.
And Sean, it's easy to forget, even back in the non-conference season, there were a couple of hiccups closing out games.
Mm-hmm.
Ball State at home.
Right.
And two times in the second half, down at Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, they led Indiana by double digits. Could not close out either one of those ball games. So going into the ACC season, I felt like they were still going to be good enough to figure out how to close out those games. They were going to be able to take advantage of winning situations, unlike in the Ball State and Indiana game. So they were a little flawed going into the ACC, but I don't think any of us felt like it was going to be a lingering problem. They were going to figure it out. But without Bonzi, of course, it's made closing out games a little more difficult. And here we are at 6-9 of the ACC, and so many games could have swung one way or the other. And unfortunately, the other is the direction most of them went, and now they're 6-9, and they're going to have to dig down deep. I hope they can figure out a way to put their best foot forward and close out this thing strong, give it their best shot, because that's all they've got right now. Just give it your best shot. The whole tournament thing is out of your hands until you get to the ACC tournament. And if you can magically win five games in a row, you're going to reach your opportunity. But the at-large road has a lot of speed bumps now. All the mulligans are gone. And it's time to figure out a way to win some of these close games. The next two, not going to be shocked if they don't win, hopefully going away. But the Virginia game, with a healthy Bonzi Colson, at least you feel like you got a shooter's opportunity. But boy, there have been some really good Irish offensive squads that have been shut down by that pack line defense. It just makes you feel like it's going to be a very difficult challenge.
Yeah, and I mean, when you talk about an at-large bid, it's not going to be just what Notre Dame is when this is all said and done. What Cinderellas are going to win their conference tournaments? That's going to knock anyone who's on the bubble down. And Notre Dame is still clawing to try to get back onto the bubble at this point. And so it's not just going to be Notre Dame's resume. It's going to be how many similar teams are sitting out there who are in some of these good conferences, even in Indiana right now, who has a head-to-head advantage over Notre Dame and is 9-7 in the Big Ten. Teams like that are sitting in the middle or lower fourth or so of their conferences, it's going to be about those teams as well.
And for perspective, Joe Lenardi, ESPN's bracketologist, was doing an interview during the Notre Dame-Miami game last night, And even before the conclusion of the Notre Dame-Miami game, Lenardi says that Notre Dame was number 77 on his list. So they had nine teams to jump in order to get into the NCAA tournament. So with the loss, you would imagine they probably might have fell back a couple of more spots. Now, a win over Virginia could do a lot, but I think that offers perspective. They were 77, in his opinion, going into last night, and that's why you just really needed to get the Miami game. And as Tom Noy pointed out in the last hour of the program, if everything goes as expected over the final week and a half of the ACC season, Notre Dame will end up 2-9 against teams with winning records in the conference, and that's just going to be a wart on the Irish resume.
Yeah. The big hole in the whole thing is, and maybe the X factor, depending on how things turn out, is Bonzi. That could be the whole argument right there. Because what if they do get Bonzi back and they go to Virginia and win that game? Then all of a sudden you can say, well, here's what we would be if we had Bonzi this whole time. But it's still a huge if, and you can't place that much on a guy who hasn't played for 2 months, because he's nowhere near, even when he comes back, he's going to be nowhere near game shape. There's a big difference between riding the bike and doing some of this other stuff and getting out there and running up and down the court in an ACC game.
He'll be inspiration for the team this week. Get him on the practice floor. After the game last night, Mike Bray spoke on the Notre Dame Basketball Network, heard on WSBT Radio. Jack Nolan and Zach Hillsland joined Mike for this post-game conversation.
I feel for our guys because, you know, we really battled. We get up five and then give up an 11-0 run. You know, sometimes you got to tip your cap to the other team. Yes. The shots that Walker made were really tough shots, and that kind of really hurt us.
And Zundu was big for them,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the big fella. We had a hard time keeping him off the backboard. So we're really disappointed. We were really trying to go 2-0 on a Saturday, Monday. You know, we went 1-1, you know, so we missed an opportunity. I've never minced words with him. I said, we missed a big opportunity tonight, but we need to get a little bit of rest, and maybe we can play as well on the road as we did last Saturday, this Saturday at Wake Forest. I think we'll have Rex back. You know, he was just a little too sore tonight, and you know, that'll certainly help us moving forward. We'll have Bonzi back in practice Thursday, Friday, and we'll see how he feels. So we got some interesting things happening this week.
Coach, certainly their athleticism was a big factor tonight, whether it was the ball screen defense, a lot of hard hedges, or the offensive glass. What were you seeing out there from them in terms of bodies?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they get you distorted when we hedge on the ball screen. There were such big targets to throw to. Then they have shooters, you know, that can knock it down, and they've got speed and transition. We gave up transition stuff in the first half. You know, there's a lot of ways for them to score, and they're a pretty good defensive team because of their athletic ability. And we shot 52%, but, you know, they made us work, and our two guards were pretty tired. I just couldn't take them out of the game tonight.
Oh, in the second half, I loved your team's patience because they knew what was on the line. And when you're guarded that way, you can speed up. You shot 61% in the second half. Your guys continued to work for big shots, and you made big shots.
You know, I thought we'd get going in the second half. We usually do here. We were really good at halftime. And again, you know, you go up five, and you're thinking you can push this thing maybe to 8 or 9, and then Walker and the big fella go to work, and it kind of breaks your back a little bit.
It's a tough one, but everything that you wanted to achieve is still there. It just got a little more difficult.
Yeah, it got a little more difficult. This would have really helped, but, you know, we got a chance to go And again, we played well on the road for the first time in a while Saturday at BC.
Yeah.
You know, I want us to play that way against Wake Forest on Saturday, and then next week will be great. I think our senior night is going to be such a celebration with this senior class, the all-time winningest class. I think Bonzi should be good to go if everything is moving in the right direction, and be neat to have him back. And I'm excited to watch him in practice Thursday. It seems like it's been a year.
Coach, thank you.
Thank you.
Mike Bray with Jack Nolan and Zach Hillsland on the Notre Dame Basketball Network last night, heard on WSBT Radio. Notre Dame 16-12, 6-9 of the ACC. They will play at a struggling Wake Forest Saturday at 3 o'clock right here on 96.1 FM WSBT. Coming up next, we're going to speak with the co-ACC Baseball Player of the Week. What a weekend he had down in Baton Rouge. Eric Gilgenbach will join us in just a couple of moments to talk about his 3-home-run, 9-RBI series against nationally ranked LSU. That's coming up next, plus some rapid fire before the end of the hour on 96.1 FM WSBT.
Take us with you in and out of the car. Download the free WSBT radio app from the iTunes or Droid App Store. Listen live anywhere.
It is 29 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat continues on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Don't forget the Mike Bray Radio Show, Thursday night at 7 here on WSBT. Let's talk some baseball. What a weekend for Mick Aoki's Fighting Irish as they went down to Baton Rouge to take on number 9 LSU. And the Fighting Irish took 2 out of 3. You could argue they very easily could have swept that series, up 6-0 in game one. That game
absolutely
got away from them, but they roared back the next two games to take down the 9th-ranked Tigers. And one of the big reasons why is joining us on the line right now, Eric Gilgenbach from Rochester, Michigan. He had a great series against the Tigers, hit .385, 3 home runs, 9 RBI, had 2 dingers and 7 ribbies in one game, and has been named the co-ACC Player of the Week. Eric, it's Darren Pritchett. Good to talk to you. How are you today?
Darren, I'm doing really good. Glad to have you. Glad to be on your show.
We greatly appreciate your time, that's for sure, after a great weekend down in Baton Rouge. Let's just start with the team perspective. First time out of the gate, you take on a top 10 team in one of the great college baseball environments down at LSU, and you take 2 out of 3. What does this weekend mean to this team? Does it change the way anything you feel about the way you guys could contend in the ACC this year?
You know, this game, this weekend obviously means a lot for us. Like, we were really pumped about it. Honestly, we went into the weekend ready to compete, and we're enjoying it now, but it's not really going to change the way that we go about our business. We're going to try to, treat every team the same, whether it's LSU or, some midweek game against a non-conference team, or, we're going to be treating each game the same.
Eric, Darren mentioned the environment down there at LSU and Alex Box Stadium. How would you describe what you guys encountered down there in those 3 games? Maybe especially Friday, because from what I understand, it was the biggest crowd ever there at that stadium. And then, so how would you describe that environment, and how were you able to stay focused in that all weekend long?
Well, if I had to use one word, it'd be electric. If I had to use another word, it'd be fun. It was a great time. We went up 6-0 like kind of early in that game, and when they started coming back, it got loud. I couldn't hear anybody on my team. It was loud. I think the way that we were able to stay calm and all that adversity, everything that was going on, was just like, one thing for me is just locking in on the pitcher and the batter. It's like narrowing your focus. Being able to try to block out as much noise as you can, thinking about what the next thing you have to do is, and when you keep your mind busy like that, you're not thinking about all the other stuff around you. So,
Eric Gilgenbach, our guest here on WSBT Radio, one of the hitting stars for the Irish down at LSU. Now, looking at your resume, you had an outstanding high school career in Rochester, Michigan. Last year with the Fighting Irish, you had 3 home runs. You had 3 home runs the opening weekend of 2018. Was there a swing change, or can you give us a reason why the power has shown up so quickly this year?
I think I've had it. I didn't have a whole lot of at-bats last year, so I really didn't get a whole lot of, a whole chance to show it, but one thing that I always try to focus on, and Coach Aoki always preaches to me, is just, I need to try to be as effortless as I can. Sometimes, less is more, when you're hitting. You can't try to swing for the fences. You just got to try to barrel balls up hard, and it just finds its way over the fence. So one of the main things for me is just, trying to stay almost within myself and just hit balls hard, not focusing on the home runs, and then they just come.
When you leave town and there's snow on the ground, and then you go down south for the season opener. I mean, one of the big questions always is for teams like you guys up here in the north is how are you going to play defense when you get down there? And I was amazed looking at the box scores. No errors in three games. How are you guys able to do so well defensively coming out of the gate?
Well, fun fact, I think that's actually the first time we've had an opening weekend without an error since 1955.
That is a fun fact.
We were talking about that. So, you know, it's they have a good surface there, so balls play well on the outfield and stuff and in the infield. I think I'm going to attribute it to our focus and our, like, it's mainly tough for the outfielders because the infielders get a lot of reps in the preseason, but outfielders, you know, we kind of just get there. We get a round of BP to get some reads and stuff, and then you're live. So it was tough, but we have guys on this team that are focused and they don't make excuses. So we were locked in.
They put the new turf on the field over there at X Stadium a few years ago. Were you guys able to get out on the field very much before the big snow came a little more than a week or so ago?
So I think we got out there maybe twice.
Okay.
And we tried to take those days that we were out there, we tried to do as much as we could to get prepared. But it was a heavy winter for us here, so it still is heavy. I mean, it's raining right now at 62, but more cold's coming.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But it's been a heavy winter, so we haven't been able to get out a whole lot. But that hasn't stopped us from doing what we need to do.
Eric Gilgenbach is our guest here on WSBT Radio. And Eric, I think fans and media members are still trying to learn what this Irish baseball team is going to be all about this year. After three baseball games and going through workouts, do you have a sense of what you believe is going to be the strength of this team?
There's a couple strengths. You know, we have a very veteran position player squad. We got a couple freshmen in the spots, but they're maturing well. Our pitching staff is rather young, but the first weekend they showed really well. But mentally, I think this team can be defined as a team that will be able to bounce back from adversity very quickly. We have a short memory for the good and the bad. We can just kind of move on to the next thing, whatever we need to. So that'll be one way to describe our team this year.
You've kind of talked about the mental side of things a couple of times between that and when you went back to blocking out the crowd and all that there down at LSU. And I think I saw over the winter some on the social media, did you guys have like a mental coach come in and do some stuff with you in the off season?
Yeah, we're really big on the mental game of baseball here. We Aoki preaches it all the time. Guys buy into it. And we had a pretty prestigious mental coach named Brian Kane come in. He works with a lot of MLB players and important business people. He helps us just, you know, with the mental side of baseball and life. And then we also utilize one of our sports psychologists here on campus who comes in a couple times a week and takes us through some routines to help ourselves calm down and get focused during games. So, yes, we do use a lot of resources like that.
Eric, we need to ask you about one of those freshman pitchers. In game two of that series against LSU, you were playing right field but still had a good view of Cole Kmet, who came in and pitched four innings of scoreless baseball to pick up the save, giving up just one base hit, walked two, struck out three. What has stood out from watching Cole early on?
He's big.
Like a tight end, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's a big dude, and he has a very good mound presence. You know, coming from football, LSU is a small stage for him. You know, he's been on big stages. He can handle the pressures that come with come with baseball. He's an incredible worker, and you know he's going to be really good for us on the mound this year. But I also think he might be able to help us out with the bat a little bit. He can really swing it. So you might see him in the lineup a little bit later on in the season.
Eric, you sound like you've got a pretty relaxed, easygoing personality. Is that kind of team wide? Is it a pretty relaxed, kind of easygoing, fun loving kind of team?
Yes, it is. You know, we have with some of our leadership, like guys like Cole Daly and Nick Podkuhl. They're the jokesters on the team. They always got jokes, so they keep things light. The relationships on the team this year are very tight. So it makes guys feel comfortable in the locker room and the field, and that also translates into games where you just have trust for each other. So
sounds like a tight bonded team. That's a really, really good sign during a long baseball season. We still have a ways to go for that home opener at X Stadium, and hopefully it's going to be a beautiful day at Eck when that takes place. But Eric, you guys are heading down to San Antonio to take part in a tournament there. St. Louis and Purdue are among the teams that you guys are going to be facing down in San Antonio. Give me your sense of what you feel like the next step is for this team after taking 2 out of 3 against LSU. Defensively, you guys were really good. The bats were good. The pitching held up. What do you kind of feel like you need to build on to take the next step?
Well, I think the next test for us is to see if we can continue, be able to continue the same thing we brought to LSU, because, you know, with a team like LSU and the stage that we were on, it's easy to get hyped up for it and want to compete at a high level. I think the next test for us is, you know, when there's not 13,000 fans there, can we still bring that same energy and resilience that we showed at LSU? So I think that's our next test.
I like that.
Eric, you had the big opening weekend personally. So if you could pick one or two of your teammates and say, this guy is going to be the guy to watch for over the next couple weeks, who's it going to be?
Pick to click.
That's right.
Man, we got a lot of talent. I'm going to tell you, you can honestly watch out for anybody. If I'm going to pick somebody, Nick Podkul's been pretty hot. He had a really good preseason. Hit like 3 home runs in the preseason for us, and he had a really good weekend as well. Really patient at the plate, does a great job at second base. So I'd put my money on him having a big couple next couple weeks.
All right, we'll jot that down. I got to ask you this, Eric, because I assume you're a big Major League Baseball fan, right?
Yes.
Okay, Tiger fan, being from Michigan.
Yeah, I'm a Tigers fan. Not a diehard one, though. That's
okay.
The thing.
Okay. Well, I just want to ask. I just want to ask you this. There is so much talk right now about pace of play. We now know you can only have 6 mound visits per game in Major League Baseball, and they're trying to cut down on so many things. As a collegiate baseball player, if you had a magic wand, and if there was a way in your mind to improve pace of play, and I got to be honest, I don't care how long a game takes. I love going to the ballpark. It can take 5 hours. I'll sit and watch it. But as a player, is there anything you see that you feel like could pick up the pace of play that might make the commissioner happy?
Maybe lengthen the fences. More out.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think you make an interesting point, because the pitchers are getting punished by this new rule because the hitters nowadays are going for the downs with 2 strikes. No one's making contact anymore, in my opinion, Eric. So at-bats are going longer. There are more strikeouts. And I think you're seeing more home runs being hit. So I actually think the pitchers are getting punished because the hitters have changed their philosophy. Am I crazy?
No, actually, I think you're right. A lot of the technical aspects of the game nowadays are talking about launch angles and, you know, trying to hit the ball in the air, so it is increasing home runs. I don't necessarily buy into all that kind of philosophy, but it is happening right now in the MLB.
Punish guys who break scoreboards. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. That you need to do?
Don't you did. Guys who break scoreboards.
Did they send you a bill down at LSU for that?
Yeah, I came out of my weekly per diem here.
Good
Very
answer.
Nice. Very nice. Hey, real quick, tell me about the shillelagh. I saw the pictures of you with the shillelagh. When did this tradition start? What's the whole thing about?
Right after we got off the bus at the first on that Friday night, Aoki pulled out the shillelagh. it's kind of like an ongoing thing. There's multiple teams out there. I don't know particularly, but one team has like a Thor hammer. I think the Arkansas Razorbacks have a pig hat or a hog hat that they wear. You got to look up on that. But it's a thing now, you know, when big plays happen, they break out their tool and use it. So the shillelagh is the Irish battlefield weapon, and it treated us well this weekend, so we're going to be bringing it along for all of them.
Boy, I sure hope when you play Miami, they don't have a home run chain or something, because that thing's going to be all dazzled. There's no doubt about that.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed that Arkansas is not coming here now, but I think they'd rather have that than a hog hat.
That's exactly right. Well, Eric, congratulations on the start of your season. What a great weekend, hitting .385, three homers, and nine RBI. And just as important, the Irish took 2 out of 3 from nationally ranked LSU. We wish you nothing but the best and have some fun down in San Antonio.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on your show.
Thank you so much for your time.
Take care.
Eric Gilgenbach, outfielder for the Fighting Irish, the junior from Rochester, Michigan, was a big reason why the Irish took care of LSU 2 out of 3, and he dented that scoreboard. The lights went out in that one little facet of
blew
the scoreboard.
It up almost. That was nice.
That's exactly right. That's the way to go. I like the per diem answer. That's a good answer coming from the SEC, if you know what I mean.
That's right.
All right. And by the way, opening day at X Stadium is March 21st against Northern Illinois University. So that is a month from tomorrow. So we've got a month to get rid of all this cruddy weather and get some nice weather here in South Bend.
They get to go to Florida twice in the meantime. Miami and Florida State. Not bad. Actually, three times because they're going to Kissimmee as well. That'll be on the same trip, it looks like. But in any case, they get to go all over Florida. There's
nothing
wrong with
that.
Had
I known this, I would have worked a little harder as a kid.
No kidding.
Wouldn't be too bad going to San Antonio and Baton Rouge in Florida for the start of the college baseball season. 13 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Rapid fire coming up next on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Thanks, Abby. 10 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser on 96.1 FM WSBT. Our thanks again to Eric Gilgenbach from the Irish baseball team. Great conversation with him. Now we get to rapid fire.
Darren.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if you guys talked about this in the first hour. Louisville basketball.
Did you get
a chance to mention that?
Mm-mm.
Well, they're vacating their wins, of course, from their 2012 Final Four season and their 2013 National Championship season after their sex scandal investigation by the NCAA. I'll repeat that. Sex scandal. Meanwhile, of course, we know that Notre Dame is vacating wins from its 2012 and 2013 seasons after self-reporting non-institutional academic issues. So I ask you, Darren, does anything sound wrong with that statement?
I was getting nervous where you were going with that.
Yes.
I was starting to sweat. It's ridiculous. The whole Notre Dame storyline's absolutely ridiculous. And can I just say this about Louisville?
Sure.
It's pretty pathetic when you have to stop and think which scandal we're talking about today. Is it this scandal? Is it that scandal? Oh, this is the sex for play scandal.
But Patino knew nothing about any of it.
We'll get to the FBI scandal on down the line. Mm-hmm. So I got to always remember, which scandal are we talking about at Louisville? Congratulations.
Yes, no kidding. And I mean, the NCAA, in its infinite wisdom, is saying that one coaching staff buying prostitutes for recruits, high school students, is equivalent of a student trainer helping a handful of students with some homework. I mean, that's literally what it comes down to. One of them is literally a crime. You know, so if you look at it on the sliding scale of justice, you're talking about a felony as opposed to a student helping some other's students with homework, and they're doling out essentially. Now Louisville is going to be fined, I guess, for some of this stuff, but still, the vacation of wins, the vacating of wins, is in the NCAA's eye. This is all equivalent. It is beyond perverted, as Father Jenkins said in his statement last week.
The perfect title for this is Title Stripped.
Ba-dum-bum! I like it.
It's just unthinkable.
That was good.
There's actually, I remember, during this time period where they're going to lose all these victories due to this stripper scandal, there was a kid who had verbally committed from Louisville, Kentucky to Illinois, and he was on board the whole time until National Signing Day, and he switched. I'm thinking, gosh, I wonder why he switched now.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder what the reason was.
Yeah. How could that be? How could it happen? Down to the wire. But Rick Pitino didn't know anything. All he knows is he got a tattoo for that championship a couple years back.
And what a shame. That was the year that the Ware kid had that devastating knee injury.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great story, and now all of it's just lost.
Yep. Right down the drain. All right. You've talked a little bit about the pitch clock today, but I'm just, Major League Baseball is going to limit the mound, not the pitch clock, but they're going to limit the mound visits. Pace of game is what you've talked about. Buy or sell that as the best way to speed things up by limiting mound visits to 6 per game in Major League Baseball.
Communication between pitcher and catcher are very, very important. If you have to switch signs and you get that screwed up, somebody could get hurt.
Yeah.
Pitcher, batter, umpire. So, again, what I said to Eric, I'll say again. Major League Baseball is punishing pitchers for the way the game has changed offensively. It is swing from your heels, whether the count is 0-0, 0-2, 3-2. It doesn't matter. No one is putting the ball in play. It's all about just swinging for the fences. And the counts get deeper, the games get longer. More offense, the longer the games go. So I don't understand why we're punishing the pitchers because of the change in the game offensively.
Well, see, is this really about pace of play, or is it just about the fact that you've got these long games where really there's not a whole lot of action going on?
Isn't that the core of it? Swing and a miss.
But it's not just swing and a miss. When balls are put in play, you've got these defensive shifts. And to me, I've always kind of sat on the side, well, I mean, how can you punish a team for having data? But I think the shifts have gone so far. I think that you could easily tweak the shifts a little bit and just say the third baseman and the shortstop, you've got to stay on the left side of the infield. The second baseman, the first baseman, you've got to stay on the right side. So you can still shift to an extent, but you can't shift quite as drastically because right now, even balls put in play, they're ground ball outs more than they are base hits, and that punishes the hitters as well. And really, I think that goes a long way toward what we're talking about. You at least want to see some action when a game is going on. Right now, as it is, a third of all outs are strikeouts, and then you've got all these shifts as well. So I don't think it's quite what baseball was meant to be, and I don't think that limiting the mound visits is going to accomplish what they want because of what you're talking about. Lance McCullers went off on it, the Astros pitcher, he went off on it on Twitter because, okay, now you're in the ninth inning of the freaking World Series, and you've got to make sure you've got this right. You've got a runner at second base. Yeah, you don't want a catcher just going out to the mound all the time, but it's pretty important that they get those signs right.
Mm-hmm. I know just reading the Post-Dispatch down in St. Louis today, the Cardinals have already started going through different signs and different ways of getting the information to the players on the field since you can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So now you're going to be stealing signs for what they're trying to tell the pitcher or the catcher. That's the next level of Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Good grief.
Again, I don't know anyone complaining about pace of play. I don't have a friend. I don't have anybody that is upset about this. So I don't know where Mr. Manfred's getting it from, but he is laying down the law, and it's going to lead to a labor problem in 2021. We are heading toward a baseball standstill in about 3 or 4 years.
I think it's a TV thing as much as anything. And, I mean, we all know that TV sets a lot of this stuff, and it seems like that's where it's coming from. They are cutting back some of the commercials as well.
Picture-in-picture, like in racing and golf we're starting to see. Maybe they go that direction.
Yep.
More rapid fire tomorrow here on WSBT. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times awaiting. Grab some Buds. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.